I have lived with pigs most of my life. And I was always impressed. I was raised in East Stanwood. Well, not really in East Stanwood. I was east of East Stanwood in a place called Snooze Hill. We had pigs on the farm, and I was always impressed how the pigs we raised on the farm resembled the Norwegians in the community. By that I mean they were temperate at the trough, neat and clean if given the chance, and dignified in courtship and marriage. So there. A few years ago, I was visiting in my parents' native Norway, and a friend of mine in Norway who owns a lot of land in the eastern part of Norway that borders on Sweden. We were out there, and we were walking along, and we met a fellow, a Swede, who had a pig on a leash. And we thought that rather strange. So we stopped and talked to him about it. And we asked him, "Where did you get it?" "I won it in a bingo game," said the pig. Now, you see, you have already confirmed something that I've been afraid of. You see, whenever you talk about pigs today, you know, a lot of you said, you know, you laughed because the pigs were like the Norwegians, because it was a real put down. And then you find out that it was really a compliment, you see. And then I talk about the Swedes, and that was also, you know, you laughed because it was a put down of the Swedes. The Norwegians laughed. The Swedes were, you know, wicked off, you see, because they felt it was a put down. Now, during the next 58 minutes, I'm going to convince you otherwise that pigs are really great. Now, before I turn off the lights, and I'll use this so you can see my lips. If there are, for any other lip readers, you can better sit up front. Now, what are the... I want to give you a few statistics that you should know. Because if the conversation gets a little dull, you need a few of these facts. There are about 800 million pigs in the world. There's a lot more in China than there are here. The largest litter that I know about was 34 pigs in one litter. The oldest pig is 27 years. The heaviest pig was 1,904 pounds. The biggest one I knew was just slightly over 1,000. I didn't see the one that weighed 1,904. The most matings by a boar in a 24-hour period was 25. I was always impressed with that. And a pig squeals at decibels of about 110 to 115. And to give you, you know, a point of reference here, if some of you have seen the Concorde jet plane, you know, that supersonic jet plane, on takeoff, the decibels there is slightly less, about 112. So that gives you a point of reference. So with that, we'll start with the prepared text, slightly modified. Better make my flashlight so I can find my way back here. The reason I got a flashlight, I'm going to see who leaves. Well, that's the outhouse. And that's where a lot of people figure they are. But I'm going to convince you that they're in the penthouse. Is this all right, Barbara? Not too good, huh? Shall I hold it more like that? Now, a lot of people, they regard the pig as sort of an advertisement for Alcoholics Anonymous, such as this picture here. or cartoons about pigs are never complimentary. He'll outgrow it. When I was a young pig, I didn't believe in greed either. But we now, in more recent years, we have more and more people are admiring pigs, realizing that this is one of God's greatest creations in the animal world. It's one of the brightest, one of the most sensitive, and with a little kindness responds remarkably. And part of this is due to Miss Piggy, who was appearing before about 250 million people every week in 110 countries. So that was a big help to us. Now, you can't read this. These are some of my own slides I made in the resource room today, and using my own resources. You can see they weren't very good, but I can read it. I think I can. Here is... Well, maybe I can. Here is that forever beguiling creature. Hot-blooded, whole-footed, what? Very intelligent, nimble-footed, fastidious hog that nobody knows. And this is from a very famous book. In fact, this book was given to me. I served on a council at the National Institutes of Health, and my final speech to them was about pigs and the greatness of pigs, so they give me the Pig Book by Hedgepeth. It's a fantastic book. It should be in every library, and I'm going to check tomorrow if it's here. There exists perhaps in creation no animal which has less justice and more injustice shown it than the pig. A distinguished man said that. And here's the pig's true nature. Warm, sensitive, clean, intelligent, loyal, lovable, merry, talented, courageous, cosmopolitan, perceptive, understanding. I ran out of room, or I could have written a lot more about it. But you get the idea. I can't always even say that about my wife. Now, to give you some history, it hasn't always done well in history. Although the pig was revered in early Europe, in Crete, and in the South Pacific, it was regarded as sacred, and still in many places today is still regarded, I think, as sacred. The Greeks sacrificed it. You got to hand it to those Greeks, very clever. What they did was they'd kill them. They'd kill a whole bunch of them for the goddess of cereals, corn and things like that. And the goddess was Ceres. And they'd also kill a whole bunch for Bacchus, the god of wine. And you see what they did before the cereals ripened, before the grapes ripened, they killed a lot of pigs, because that really cut down on the loss of the cereals and the wine, because or the wine grapes, because the pigs like them and would go out and ravage them. The Muslims and the Jews, of course, the pigs are an anathema. They don't even want to say the name of the pig. They'll say that thing. And if you're a Muslim, you can't go into the temple if you're a swineherder. And you can't be married in the temple. In fact, you can't marry anybody that's not associated with pigs. You can only stay with the pig people. And that's why swineherders have become so famous. In Egypt, they're only allowed to handle pigs and deal with pigs once a year when they sacrifice a lot of them for the moon god. And any other time of the year, they are not allowed to touch pigs. And if they touch a pig, They got to dive in. No matter what they're wearing, they dive into the Nile to get cleaned up. I guess that's all I'm going to say about that. Now, let me just check my notes here to be sure that I am not getting ahead of myself. You hope I am, I suppose, but I'm going to... Now, I forgot one thing. Why don't they like pigs? Why are they down on pigs? Well, this is a very important question. For a while, a lot of them thought it was because the pigs might cause leprosy, which was false. Another thing, they felt that the pig was sort of cleaned up the trash and ate a lot of bad things and was indiscriminate in what it ate. But Linnaeus, the great biologist, he did a checkup on all of the domestic animals that people eat, and the pig was the most fastidious of all of them. Now, another reason, of course, was trichinosis, because if you ate raw pork or something that wasn't cooked properly, and that's true also today, you can contract trichinosis. But I think the real reason that the Jews didn't like pigs is that they'd tear up their grape orchards and cut into their wine supply. You see, I mean, so they didn't really have, when the pigs were out tearing up things, they didn't have enough wine. And I think that's why they're really wicked off with them. But that's my own opinion. But I'll tell you something else that probably most of you don't know, and I didn't really realize it until this last year when I was doing research on it. But before Isaiah's time, the Jews would meet secretly in gardens and have a feast, a sacramental feast, on pigs and mice. And it was a sacramental feed, a sacramental supper to celebrate the body and blood of the gods. And that's, according to my source, true. Now, before I get into the language, I wanted to tell you a little bit about how so many millions of people throughout centuries have loved pork. They have been really the means of survival for millions of people. And many of them, of course, went to great lengths to even make, to improve them, to make them, to breed better ones. And the Greeks were, and the Romans too. The Romans had special diets they'd give to fig. In fact, they'd load them up, they'd force feed them on figs and honeyed wine to make big fat livers, which they thought were a delicacy, which I thought was a lousy deal for the pigs. And they had another special dish, which was called porcus Trojanus, and they'd take a whole carcass of a pig and they'd fill it up with all kinds of birds. And boy, I know Edith and Al White are going to cringe when I tell them what was in there. There were thrushes, larks, nightingales, and garden warblers, in addition to a lot of other goodies. And then they had a very rich sauce they'd basted it with a lot of wine. And it was considered a fantastic delicacy. Another person that really enjoyed wine, enjoyed lamb, was Charles Lamb, as you might, enjoyed pork, was an unlikely fellow named Charles Lamb. And to prove this point, he, and I'm going to have to resort to my notes here for a minute, Barbara. He wrote a letter to Coleridge, and he says, "To confess an honest truth, a pig is one of the things that I could never think of sending away. Teals, widgeons, snipes, barnyard fowl, ducks, geese, your tame velatic things, Welsh mutton, sturgeon, fresh and pickled, your potted char, Swiss cheese, French pies, early grapes, I impart as freely unto my friends as to myself. They are but self-extended, but pigs are pigs, and I myself therein am nearest to myself. Yours, short of a pig, to command in everything, Charles Lamb." Now, I want to talk about language now and clear up a few things. Now, a pig usually says, "Gronk." That's what a pig usually says. But if he's disturbed, he'll say, "Rawr." If he wants his associate to move over, he says, "Ronk." And if he's happy, he'll say, "Barf." That's not to be confused with barf. And when they're startled, they'll say, "Wee." Now, you see, most of you came in here thinking today that pigs say oink. They don't say oink. And I want to knock that off. So cross it off. And I'm having trouble with some people on this. There is, and this is for real now, there's a store in New England that all they sell are pig things. And they got a whole catalog of them. Hey, that's neat. And one of the things they make, I think one of the clever things, are for people that are on a diet. It's called an oinkulator. And what you do, you put it in your refrigerator. And every time you open the refrigerator door, it goes oink, oink, oink. Well, I'm in communication with the people at, it's called Hog Wild is the name of the store, in case you... And if you write to me, I'll give you the address. But I'm trying to get them to change that. Now, another thing that pigs say, I mean, they scream bloody murder if you pick them up wrong. And one of the terrible things that happened, you see, one of the best models for people, for studying people, is the pig. And we were slowed up in that a great deal because of the Russians. Specifically, one Russian, he was a very famous physiologist named Pavlov. And this is our daughter Karn's rendition of Pavlov, the mad Russian, when she was still in high school, I think. Remember, he became famous by cutting hole in a dog's stomach and feeding it and ringing a bell at the same time it fed it. And then pretty soon he didn't have to feed it, he just ring the bell and he found out that the gastric juice poured out, you see? And that's called some of you think it's a conditioned response, it's really a conditional response. Well, he probably read some material from other people like John Hunter and others. And so he says, "Well, if pigs are so great, we better try them out in our lab." So they went and got a pig and brought it into the lab, and of course they didn't know how to handle it, and it screamed bloody murder. So he, after that, forbid all pigs from his laboratory. He said all pigs are hysterical. And so they slowed up research remarkably. So that's one of the reasons I'm wicked off of the Russians. Now, if you just examine with me now for a few minutes of how poor we would be. I'm afraid some of you can't see all of these pictures. Maybe you don't want to, but I insist that you do. I'm going to move this over. And And our language would be so much poorer if we took out all the references to pigs. Hog. That's usually a term of derision. I suppose there's 18 definitions in a big dictionary for hog, and only one of them has to do with the animal. Bring home the bacon. Now, this is an interesting one. It has two derivations. In the old days, they used to have a terrible thing called a greased pig contest. They'd grease up a pig, and everybody'd terrorize the pig trying to catch it. And they'd usually slip out of them, but eventually it got so tired out, somebody'd get it. And then the prize was to get the pig, and that's what they called bringing home the bacon. But there's also a 700-year ceremony in Essex in England that was restarted again. It was re-inaugurated in the late 40s, I think. And there, if a couple are married for a year and say they're happy and don't want to become unmarried, they get a slide of bacon. So it was worth some of them to stay happy for a year. And that's what's the derivation of bring home the bacon. Eating high on the hog. The choice cuts on the pig are up high. The sow belly and the pickled pig's feet are for the proletariat. Pig at a driver. That's the other guy that's always hogging the road or doing the wrong thing. Hog tied has many derivations. If you hog tie someone or an animal, you tie up all their legs. But it also extends to if you're tied to somebody else that's running your life. If you go a whole hog, a hog used to be a dimension of a coin, and worth about, I can't remember, a nickel or a dime. And if you spent the whole one, like in those days you could go to a movie for a hog, you see, and you'd go whole hog, you see, you'd spend the whole thing. Or you hog it all, that means when we have something very delicious in the kitchen, and the first person takes half of it, and the other seven take the rest. A road hog, that's the one that takes up too much of the road. If you go hog wild, you lose control. If you ham it up, or you're a ham, I happen to be a ham radio operator, and they're very talkative people. Another thing on ham is it's, when they ham it up, in the old theater days, they used to use pig lard to wipe up the makeup off the face. And it's also getting good for getting pitch out of pants. Hamming it up, you do that. That's the one I just talked about. In a pig's eye, if you're going to put somebody down or you're derisive, so you say in a pig's eye. Independent of hog on ice, the derivation of that is up for grab, sort of. But we know that pigs are very careful on ice. They're very hesitant to get on ice, and once they're perked there, they don't want anybody monkeying with them, because they're very uneasy on ice. Pork pie hats. That's what Lois Erickson was wearing when she came into the village today. It's the brim is turned down all around. I wear one a lot. Hogwash. Well, that's if somebody says something that's a cross between a abalone and a crocodile, it's a crocabalone. Then you say hogwash. Pigtails, girls, and in the old days, Chinese men used to wear pigtails. Pigskin, people used to kick the pigskin. Footballs used to be made out of it. And piggyback is to ride on the back of a pig. And here's a pig with a harness on it, and it does take pigs for, it takes children for rides. You go piggyback on that. Another thing that I'd like to clear up, a lot of people say you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Well, I'm here to tell you that you can.
And the Arthur D. Lil Company, which still exists, it had been operating in Cambridge, Massachusetts since early days. It's a research, engineering, technical, economics, and advanced equipment, still located in Cambridge, Massachusetts. In 1921,
they decided to find out, you know, what's in silk. And they examined this and on what's in silk, and also if there's something in the pig's ear that they could make silk out of. And they did. They found it, and they bought 1,000 pig ears from Wilson Packing Company in Chicago, and they had that material made out of those pigs,
and they made a silk purse, which if you go there today,
it's a silk purse like the distinguished women of Europe used to wear.
And there it is. It's still on display in their museum at Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is a silk purse which chemists made from the sow's ears in the laboratory of Arthur D. Lil.
So when anybody tells you you can't make a silk purse out of sow's ears, straighten them out.
Now,
I sent this to a fellow named Ed David. I don't know if that rings a bell to any of you. Ed David was at one time presidential science advisor. I think maybe to Nixon. I'm not sure. He's now president of Exxon Research. And he's kind of an animal man, and I was talking about this one day, and I said he was very interested in this and how it was done, so I sent him this material. And he wrote me back, and he said, commenting on this, he wrote, I'm reminded of Ogden Nash. The pig, if I am not mistaken, gives us ham and pork and bacon. Some say his heart is big, but I think it's the stupid of the pig. This Ogden Nash contribution serves to introduce my next subject, which is pigs in literature. Now, all of you have touched the toes of a child and said this little pig went to market and so forth. You've all done that, and I hope you keep doing it, much to the delight of the child. And if you haven't read it, you should all read E.B. White's Charlotte's Web. If you can't find it, I'll loan you one. Okay, thank you. And another one is The Death of a Pig. And R.N. Peck's wrote a book that I've recently read. It's a fantastic book, A Day No Pigs Would Die. And that should be required reading for everyone. Now, one of my favorite English authors is G.K. Chesterton. He wrote a lot of beautiful things, but he also thought pigs were beautiful, and he wrote a lot of wonderful things about pigs. Now, I liked him even before I found this. And he said, the actual lines of a pig are among the loveliest and most luxuriant in nature. The pig has the same great curves, swift and yet heavy, which we see in the rushing water or in a rolling cloud. In another place, he says, the beauty of the best pigs lies in the certain sleepy perfection of contour which links them especially to the smooth strength of our South English land in which they live. There are two other things in which one can see this perfect and piggish quality. One is the silent and smooth swell of the Sussex Downs, so enormous and yet so innocent. And the other is in the sleek, strong limbs of those beech trees that grow so thick in their valleys. These three holy symbols, the pig, the beech tree, and the chalk down, stand forever as expressing the one thing that England has to say, that power is not inconsistent with kindness. Where Napoleon takes over everything. And Margaret Blount said about this, Napoleon was really not a pig. He was a man all the time, leading the trustful animals along the dismal downward path of exploitation, forced confessions, execution, secret police, bureaucracy, extravagance, and bending and reversal of the rules and promises of a glorious revolutionary dawn. So that takes care of that. Now, this brings us to a very important subject of how to turn off this flashlight. Yes. I don't want to wear out your batteries. I'll wear out my own here. And that is, I have spent a good part of my life in research, and quite a bit of this on pigs, because of their likeness to people. And these are just some of the diseases in people that animals have been used for, that pigs have been used for, and some very useful results resulted from that. Here's Leonardo da Vinci, who had a lot of firsts for some reason. This is another picture that Karn drew for me for this lecture many, many years ago when she was still in high school. And he was the first one to describe the cycle of the heart. He stuck a pin into the pig's heart and checked the cycle on the heart. And he was then one of the early pioneers in this, and it is well that he picked a pig because of its similarity of the cardiovascular system. Now, one of the greatest men of medicine that England ever produced was John Hunter. And he, too, recognized that the pig was probably the best of all the experimental animals for extrapolation, for application of the data that resulted to people. And the heart, for example, is very, very similar. This happens to be the coronary circulation of the heart of a pig. And you study that for a minute now and you'll see its similarity to that of a human. The dog is not that way, nor most of the other animals. And that's why quite a few studies have been done on it. Probably some of you here, up till recently, the best heart valve, a replacement, was the Hancock valve, which is made out of a pig's heart. And many people have them, thousands of people have them. If you would have gone to the University of Oregon Dental School some years ago, a lot of the basic work on orthodontic appliances and their effects was done on pigs, because the dentition of the miniature pig is very similar to that of people. The skin of the pig responds to radiation and other toxic materials in the same way as man, and also women. And many people are alive today because up until recently, too, pig skin was used in bad burns to cover them up, as in the case of that child. Remember in the old days we used to have a contest, which twin has the Tony? Well, this is a picture of a pig and me. That's me and the pig. The pig kind of won out on that. But it's to make the point of the similarities. In nutrition, those of you who have little children and you nurse them with some of the replacements for the milk replacements of human milk, you can rest assured tonight and sleep secure, because most all of those replacement formulas are tested out on baby pigs before they're released for use by your children. And that's a true test, because the demands of the growing young pig are more stringent than that of your child. This happens to be a very interesting study on pigs on the effect of starvation over an extended period of time. These happen to be littermate pigs. And then they were checking out, then could they recover after a certain time? And they were studying then the bone formations of it. This was an English work. And there, the two pigs that you saw in the last picture are the two lead pigs here. So they were able to recover from this with proper nutrition. In many cultures, and I just threw this in here, my wife wouldn't let me show you one that a missionary in New Guinea gave me, but if you go to New Guinea today, they are very fond of pigs there, and in some places you'll see probably more women nursing little piglets on their breasts than babies. They will not, however, eat the pig that they nurse on their breast. Somebody else eats them. But they are very fond of them. They also nurse, in some areas, pups. So there's a strong bond there between people and animals. And I started early. Some of my early research work was done in the nutrition of pigs. I became very interested in bringing pigs into the laboratory. For one reason, they attracted very beautiful pig herders. And one of our problems in our early research was that the pigs got too big. We'd end up with a pig like this on the left here, and they'd keep growing. And I wanted something more like this size that you could wrestle and overcome. Something smaller than my friend Glenn Horseman. You see, the trouble with pigs, the longer you keep them around, they eat you out of house and home, they take a lot of corn, and pretty soon you can't take them one fall out of five. And they gotta tear up the headquarters, you know. So we set out then to develop a miniature pig, and we were successful in this. The first people who built a miniature pig was the Hormel Institute with the University of Minnesota. But they wouldn't. I wanted to study them and have intact animals, and they would only release castrated animals, and it's kind of hard to raise pigs that way. So at least I didn't figure it out. And we also wanted a light-colored pig because some of the things we were studying, we wanted to see if it produced any effects on the skin that were you could. Record, and this happens to be the first release of some of our miniature swine to the University of California, where I had left. And here you see some happy people getting a miniature. And this is a white pig now that's pregnant. It will deliver in about a month. And here is a girl, a very dear friend of my wife's and I. Her name is Linda Panapinto, and she's done more for pigs. I think in their proper handling and treating them, laboratory animals, with respect. She's at Colorado State University, and she's taken over the miniature swine colony, really, for Charles River. And she started out with the Yucatan, the Yucatan pigs, which were brought into this country as a good experimental animal. The Yucatan pigs need some explanation. A veterinarian was down in vacation in Mexico, and he was out in Yucatan Peninsula. And he was very impressed with the pigs that he saw in the Yucatan Peninsula. They lived with the people in their houses. Now, if you were a Yucatanian living with the pigs, who would you kill and eat? Well, you'd kill the big ornery ones. So you ended up with a bunch of small and gentle pigs, and that's what they are. And here you see one of them. That's one of her pets. And she, if you ordered some Yucatan pigs from her, she'll deliver them to you, and then she'll tell you how you better take care of them. And then she'll probably come back and check up to see if you do. She really loves pigs. And what I did for her. I gave this paper, I opened this international congress here in, I think it was in June, at the University of Maryland. And I wanted to make a presentation to her of a t-shirt. And I went to Hog Wild to get their list of t-shirts. But you see, they didn't have the right t-shirt for me. Like, my hog is bigger than your hog and all those. And so I had one made for it. My pigs are smaller than your pigs, because she was trying to build a miniature pig. And we were consulting with her, and they're making good progress on that. And due to because of our research, and we wrote up In fact, I submitted an article to Scientific American. It was published in about 1976. Representative Schwengel, some of you are from Iowa here, he was a great congressman, loved pigs, and he got my article and put it into the Congressional Record and told me about it here. I just show his legitimate signature, but he told me that he put it in. I'll have more to say about him later in the lecture. And as a result of this, we got a lot of notoriety. And I'm always getting pictures. I get all kinds of pictures sent to me, all kinds of memorabilia. Some of I'll show you now, like this lovely portrait of a beautiful, beautiful pig. Looks like one of our miniatures. My birthday card, this happens to be a piggyback. This is called a piggyback birthday card. And some very beautiful words inside. So I'm always getting things like this. And if you come to my house, if you let me know you're coming, I'll have tea or something for you. And we'll have the cookies in the pig jar here. There'll be pig napkins. There'll be pig plates. There'll be pig cups here. On a pig tray. Pig sugar. And creamer. And a honey pot with a pig on it. I'll probably be wearing a pig tie. See those pigs on there? Pig tie. You can buy them too at Hog Wild. You use a different kind of bank for big deposits. I use Miss Lily. For smaller deposits, I use this one. And when I take a shower, I use a pig soap. Here's my study. I'm sitting in my study. I'm wearing my pig hat. If I would have known I was going to lecture this week, I'd have brought a lot of my material with me. Last time I was here, I wore my pig hat. You see the pig hat here? It's got a tail in the back. And I'm writing now on some pig stationery. Here's a pig thing here. I'm now reading a book. I'm writing to somebody about a day no pigs would die. There are a lot of my memorabilia. I got all kinds of pig memorabilia. Here you get a closer look at it. I'm writing with a pig pencil. I also have a pig pen. It's really a pen. Here's my favorite stationery. When I want to tell somebody off, I use my stationery with hogwash on it. Here's a pig getting a hogwash. I keep my laundry in a sack that says hogwash on it. Here are my shoelaces. I have little pink pigs on them, you see here. There's a pig on my sock. And these shoes. What are the most comfortable shoes today? That's right. But when you go in to order them to a shoe shop, what do you order? You say, hush puppies, don't you? See, anything good about pigs, they call them something else. When I go into a shoe store to get comfortable shoes, I say, I'd like a pair of hush piggies. And of course, they say, what do you mean, hush piggies? You mean hush puppies? No, I say, I mean hush piggies. So then I give them my lecture. So I want you to join me in this. Let's call them what they are. Now, when I'm really going high class, When I'm going to give a really important lecture, like when I gave for example, a graduation address at North Carolina State University this year, I wore a pig tie. Huh? I mean, you really dress up, and you have these pigs. You can't see them very well, can you? See them? I, I got to tell you about that. A fellow I know, you think I'm a big football jock, but I'm really not, but I do know Johnny Riggins. And he likes pigs. Johnny Riggins is a very famous fullback for the Washington Redskins. And he's great on pigs. And he saw my tie, and he was going to wrestle me for it. And I thought that was a losing proposition. So I says, I'll get you one. So see, if you ever see him in a tie, it'll probably be a pog tie that he got from me. So when I take my wife out on the town, she wears a pig earrings and a beautiful pig brooch. I'm sorry it doesn't come out real clear here, but it's really a thing of beauty. She might argue that. We always have a big discussion about this every time she's going to wear them. Now, I was recently honored, and I had to give credit where credit was due. I said I must also extend my heartfelt thanks to my pet pigs who were always there when I needed them. A very moving event. Now, a big question is, how smart are pigs? Now, I'm going to take care of that in just a few minutes. I'm sorry, I could spend the whole hour on it. Some of them say, you know, is it just a pretty face? Are they just, pigs are beautiful? This happens to be in a police station. You know, when people started to make fun of police and be derogatory about police, they called them pigs, didn't they? Or the local fuzz. Well, they turned that around, and they realized that pigs were really great, And so they turn the tables on people.
Somebody made some money on me because in our article, I had looked up some data back in 1815, published in Rural Sports, at a time in England when they wouldn't permit dogs to be used for hunting. So some enterprising brothers trained pigs to hunt. And the most famous one of these was a gilt named, and I wish they had a better name for it, but they called her Slut. And Slut was trained to hunt and point game, and it did it better than dogs. And whenever they were going hunting and take the gun off the wall, the pig would become very excited. And it was very effective at this. In fact, a pig can smell. Its sense of smell is far better than a dog. In fact, in hunting truffles in France, they always used to use pigs. And they only had to use them once a week. Truffles are a very expensive mushroom-like thing that grows underground. And they only used to have use a pig once a week because they can detect them about 10 feet away and a foot and a half down. But now the Frenchmen have gone using dogs, but they have to use them more frequently because they have to be right over it, and the truffles have to be more advanced in their growth. The reason they don't use pigs is that they're kind of heavy to lift into the back of a Renault, the bigger they get. And then when they find the truffles, you got to kind of wrestle them to beat them to the truffles because they know how good they are. So that they're kind of a disadvantage, but when we get the miniatures, pigs all developed, this will take care of it. But what happened on this, and this fellow read this, and he didn't tell any of his friends. He's a barkeeper, a bartender in Florida. So he bet two of his customers, who were probably partially inebriated, he bet them that pigs hunted. And the bet was there was some money involved, and then they had to carry these signs for a long ways, saying that, yes, hogs can point burden. Just ask me. And the bartender is riding the bicycle, or the motorbike. So that's how he made some money. And it's really, really true that this occurred. And I should say, too, that pigs can be trained as guard pigs. In fact, there was a enterprising group down in Florida who trained their pig to guard their marijuana patch. And it took two policemen to subdue them. I mean, they really tore into this pig, really tore into them, and one of them couldn't subdue them. So they make good guard pigs. I think we may come to it, and I'm serious about this. If I were a pilot, I wouldn't fly into Middle East anywhere that didn't use a well-trained dog to sniff out both for contraband of any sort, including munitions. But it will make a great jump forward if we have miniature swine who are trained, because they are even more sensitive and probably smarter. In fact, on tests of various kinds of tests, it depends on like kind of questions you ask, but on many tests, the pigs will come out first. And they're far easier trained, for example, house training than a dog. And they also foretell weather. Darwin noted this. It is a sure sign of a cold wind when pigs collect straw in their mouths and run about crying loudly. They would carry it to their beds for warmth, and they would also encourage others to do this. And I should say, pigs do a lot of communicating with each other, a lot of touching. They're a very communal type thing, and they do a lot of talking. Among our domestic animals, they're next to the chickens as far as their communication with one another. And they'll respond to their name. This is Martha. It's Linda Panapinto's favorite pig. She always sent me birth announcements when Martha had little ones. Here she was 65 pounds when she had her first litter of five. And I used to send her birthday cards. I can't send them anymore because I just got a death announcement on Martha. She just died, and Linda cried and very much in grief over the loss of Martha. You could call Martha from 100 yards away. Just a really neat member of the family. And she's some of the base now to develop a smaller pig. You see, what we'd like to have is a pig about 40 to 50 pounds. Now, on calling pigs, many people have their own way of calling them. I've used two of them, some of you. Suey! Suey! That's one way to do it, and I won't wake you all of you up with it, but some use hui, haya, and I've also used pig, 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 pig. Some of you use that. But the pigs get used to this and respond to it very well. And one of the most famous stories of this was on the Tyrrhenian Sea. Well, in the old days, when pirates would come in and they'd steal the pigs. And on this particular day, they came in and stole these pigs. Of course, the farmers couldn't do anything about it because the pirates would kill them. So they just let them take the pigs. And as soon as they got them back on the big ship, they just started to get underway. Of course, the pigs were trained to being called for dinner, you see. So the farmers went down the shore and started calling, "Suey, suey," you know. And the pigs all went to one side of the ship, which tipped the ship over, threw the pirates out. They couldn't swim, so they drowned. And all the pigs swam in the shore. The pigs are very good swimmers. In Iowa, there was, when you flooded around Des Moines there, there was a sow and her litter. They swam a long ways to high ground. There, down in Scotland, there was a pig that went 4 miles. There's some indication on the pigs going to Madagascar, probably in some of the offshore islands some places, probably swam up to 25 miles. And they have very good direction. And I know a fellow that had a pig and a dog as pets, and he'd throw a stick out, and oftentimes the pig would get there before the dog. And so they are remarkable swimmers and have good sense of direction. And I wish I happened to bring these slides. I had to reorganize my slides. I was going to take my time out to organize my slides, so I don't have all of them. But some of you probably read about Priscilla the pig. It's a very famous pig in Houston. And what the pig did, and it wasn't full grown yet, one day this lady, her handicapped son was out, and she told him not to go out too deep, and she wasn't watching him, and he went out too deep. He was about 150 feet from shore, and he couldn't swim, and he got over his head. So he's calling for help, and this pig went out after him. Priscilla the pig went out after him, and it had a leash on it, so he caught a hold of the leash, and the pig pulled him in, went under twice because the person weighed twice as much as the pig, and he saved this boy. So it became very famous and was taken. I was on television in Windy City. And I had the picture. The American Humane Society, probably the first time in history, given the Stillman Award for courage and bravery. It's the first time that a pig ever got it. And Priscilla got it this year.
So we're all very happy about that. Pigs are very clean, if given the chance,
because they can't get rid of their heat. They always, if you don't provide cooling apparatus, when I was with Battelle, we always had cold showers for them. People marveled at how clean our animals were. And they always pick their one of the few species that will pick only one area in their pen for their bathroom chores and not mess up anything else.
And ours were very clean. Here's a pig that's trained to take a shower when it gets too hot, and then pole goes over and takes a shower. And they're also readily toilet trained.
Now, what about pigs as pets?
This is my chief and I are in bed there with our cat. And she says, do you think the cat will be jealous because the pig's on the foot of the bed?
That's to introduce the subject of pigs as pets. In many places, they are as pets. There's some very famous people that have had pigs as pets. Sir Walter Scott.
I think here's Albert Schweitzer.
Albert Schweitzer had a couple of pigs. He had one pig that was a special pet of his. And whenever he had an outdoor chapel at Lambrine, and whenever the bell would ring for chapel, this pig was the first one to the chapel, and he always laid down right next to where Schweitzer always sat in one place. He'd always beat him to the chapel.
Probably got as much out of the sermon as the rest of them.
Now, who else are famous people? Abraham Lincoln. He couldn't afford a regular pet like a dog and a cat because they were so poor. But he had a pig as a pet, and he thought they were smarter than these other pets, and he was very proud of his pig.